Hello and welcome to Series 1 of the podcast The Heart of Teaching, produced by Hibernia College. My name is Aoife Lynham, teacher and researcher, and in this podcast I speak with educators from a variety of fields and ask them about the teachers who inspired them to get where they are today. So join us as we meet the inspirational for a little bit of inspiration. I'm delighted to be here today to welcome Paul Knox to the studio. Paul is a qualified primary school teacher and he's had a lot of experience in a short amount of time. He has worked with the PDST and he's specifically worked in the areas of SPHE and wellbeing. He's currently working with the NCCA and he's focusing on RSE. Paul is going to speak to us today about finding his voice in education, striving to become a better teacher, and really sharing with us what the heart of teaching means to him. So welcome, Paul.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here. And I agree, actually, having a podcast for teachers to listen to around some of the stories in education is really important. And I also feel that, you know, you said there that I share stuff on Twitter, or, you know, that I feel that to find my voice in education or whatever that is, you know, I'm not a great teacher, I'm a good teacher, and I'm always striving to become a better teacher. And I'm always asking questions. So, you know, I'm not sure if there'll be anything inspirational in what I tell you, but I hope that, you know, there might be something in my story that other teachers can relate to, because often, you know, teaching can be seen as a very perfectionist career if you're looking at Pinterest and you're looking on blogs. And actually, you know, teaching is messy, teaching can be chaotic. But within that, people can find their space, people can find their voice as a teacher, you know. And in my career, you know, it wasn't through beautiful displays or really neat classrooms. You know, I found my voice through, you know, having a relationship with kids and getting on with them and, you know, joking and laughing. So, you know, hopefully people will hear something of themselves in my story. And, you know, they might be a little bit more comfortable with, you know, not being a great teacher, but being a good teacher, because, you know, we have our whole careers to be great.
Yeah, and I think that's really reassuring, actually, that, you know, the idea of perfection and trying to be the best teacher possible, that it's okay to not be there yet as long as you're still striving for it, which it sounds like you're continuing to do, as I am continuing to do, because only last week I was trying to look for podcasts to give me some ideas and refresh my teaching and give me some kind of inspiration. So I suppose, tell us, Paul, why did you actually decide to become a teacher in the first place?
I suppose, don't ask me that on a Friday after a week of hectic lessons and teaching, because I'll say, I don't know. And I think most teachers will, you know, sometimes they tear their hair out when you ask them why they became a teacher. But I think you do have to ask yourself, you know, quite often, why am I a teacher? Why am I teaching at primary school level? What got me into this? Because the career is so busy and so pressurized, and there's so many voices and stakeholders that often you forget, well, why am I here and what's my reason for this? You know, and you'll hear, you know, the media or people saying, you know, it's the holidays, it's the security. They enhance why you are a teacher and staying a teacher, but they definitely don't sustain people in the career. For me, you know, I'm not quite sure why I became a teacher. When I look back, my parents are teachers, my aunts and uncles were teachers. I suppose it felt like, you know, and it's a bit of a cliche, but it was the family business. But, you know, actually, it felt initially like a bit of a mistake because I didn't think about it. And actually, studying teaching is very difficult. People have this presumption that training and becoming a teacher is easy because we've all been through the system. But actually, it's so much more different and difficult, because how you imagine you were taught and then go on to try and teach is not how it is at all. So for me, I suppose the question or the question I'll answer is, you know, why did I decide to stay a teacher? Because we all have a choice, and there's plenty of careers out there for people to move into, you know, if teaching isn't for them. But for me, after a couple of tough years where you're really trying to develop your skills, your practice, your content, your planning, dealing with behavior and parents, for me, it was, to consider, I suppose, the impact that I was making on the ground in the classroom. That actually, you know, for all the policy, for all the planning, for all the rhetoric, I was actually making a difference because, you know, children were coming into my classroom. They were excited about what we were going to do that day, or small interventions that I might have created for children would lead to positive outcomes for them. So the reason why I stay a teacher and the reason why I'm enthusiastic about staying a teacher, you know, for the next 30 years or, you know, if the retirement age increases, you know, I'll be 70 in a junior infant classroom, you know, who knows? But what keeps me there, and I think what keeps a lot of teachers there, is that impact that often you don't get that close to, you know, the ground when it comes to your job or career. And I think for teachers, that link is really important. There's also a second reason, and it's on reflection when I look at my friends in other careers. It's around being able to bring your whole self to teaching. I don't think there's any other career where you can have pastimes or hobbies that you can actually bring into the classroom to enhance your teaching, whether you're an artist or you love drama or you love sport or you're a reading buff or you're a Gaelgor. You can bring those elements of your personality to the classroom and you don't have to be locked out like they might in a career where you're sitting at an office desk. And I think that really needs to be emphasized, because while there are many things that make teaching pressurized, the fact that you can walk in as your whole self into a classroom and bring all your skills and talents to bear is really fulfilling for people. And I think that, you know, those are the things that help me reflect on and say, you know what, yes, there are challenges in teaching. However, the benefits far outweigh the challenges. And that as long as, you know, I still feel I'm making an impact, and as long as I can bring myself into the classroom, you know, for me, it's my sense of humour. I'd be telling jokes in the classroom. I'd be singing out instructions. You know, the kids thought I was weird, but they got it. And that's what I brought to a classroom. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do that if I was in an office, or I couldn't do that if I worked in a clothes shop. So I think it's important, you know, for me as an individual to be my whole self. And that's what teaching is to me, and why I stay in it, and why I became a teacher, really.
Well, I think that's actually really lovely. And you started off by saying that you may not be inspiring anyone, but I actually think that first question, that was quite an inspiring response. Was there any teacher that you tried to emulate? Was there anyone who you can remember was your absolute favourite teacher?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, like when you ask teachers, why did you become a teacher? It's often because they had the experience of a certain teacher who they looked up to or admired, or who gave them experience that they wanted to emulate. For me, it's similar, but I never became a teacher because of the teachers I had. But when I think of a teacher who had an effect on me, and maybe, I suppose, inadvertently is what I try and bring to the classroom, is a teacher who I can't actually remember specifically what she did, but it was the feeling I got when I was in her classroom. So her name was Anini Corhig. She doesn't teach in a Gaelic school anymore, so I don't know what her English name is. But I always remember, you know, having her in second class and just feeling really safe, feeling really, I don't know, creative and interested and enthused. And I remember going into third class and being really apprehensive and scared because I wouldn't have this teacher anymore. And I can't put my finger on what I liked. I don't know if it was the jellies on a Friday or if it was, you know, the extra time that she'd give me to take down writing because I wasn't very quick at it. But flash forward two more years and, you know, in fifth and sixth class, we had her as a teacher again. And, you know, I would be kind of an anxious, apprehensive person. And I can pinpoint the times in my life where I was or I wasn't. And I wasn't going into her class because she made me feel safe. She made me feel comfortable. She made me feel, I suppose, who I was. And that was pretty awesome. You know, I can't, you know, she might have given out to me. She always said I wasn't great at maths or my Irish spellings weren't great. But that didn't matter because I know deep down that she liked me. And I know deep down that I was worth something in her classroom. And that's kind of what I try and bring to the class. I mightn't be great at, you know, teaching phonics, or I mightn't be great at, you know, sitting down and making sure that I know like the maths curriculum inside out. But I really want to make children feel that they're worth something, that when they're in my classroom, they're important and they have a contribution to make. And that when they leave my classroom, that, you know, there's a place for them in the world I think that's how she made me feel. Now, I couldn't put my finger on it at the time, but on reflection, you know, that's what it was. And I think a really good teacher, you know, sometimes you'll get hung up on the notes, the way your classroom looks, what other people think of you. But actually, you need to drill down and fundamentally say to yourself, well, what do I want these kids to have when they, you know, when they leave my classroom, when they come back in 20 years and say, you know, what was it about school? You don't want them to say that, you know, I had a really good reading lesson or I had a lovely display on, you know, Monet or whatever. You want to say that teacher made me feel like I was special, I was important, and I was worthy and worth something.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely what we were, what we're talking about when I was saying it's so hard to find podcasts and people talking about the real heart of teaching, but that is the heart of teaching. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, it's relationships as well. So it's relationships. It's about how you build relationships with children. It's about the way you make them feel. It's about that safety that you create, because without all of that, it's very hard to create an effective learning environment for young people. So I suppose when you think back on your career of 10 years, was there any event or experience that you would actually do differently? Anything you'd change if you had a magic wand?
I suppose there's a couple of things that I would change, and they're not actually in relation to things I did, but actually the ways I taught. So my very first year teaching, you know, I jumped into the classroom and I became, I suppose, a vision of what I thought good teaching was. I didn't have, well, I suppose I didn't feel like I had any role models in teaching, because coming from college, you know, there's very high expectations when you're doing a primary level degree. You've got lots of very good teachers who are very good at making resources and planning, and I never fitted that type of mold. So when I began teaching, I was a little bit vulnerable because I didn't know who I was or what my teacher voice would be or what the heart of teaching was for me. So I kind of overworked in terms of my planning, in terms of my lessons, in terms of, you know, the displays I had in my classroom, and, you know, always chopping and changing methodologies when I read an interesting article or saw a Pinterest post. And I suppose what that led was a kind of a cycle of, you know, always trying to better myself rather than go back to, okay, who am I as a teacher? What strengths do I bring? And how can I function in this job while still actually having a life outside teaching? Because I think the idea or the vision of a perfect teacher is this mentor who's in early, who's, you know, really organized, who has beautiful displays, you know, who's staying like really late in the afternoon and who's always planning in front of the television watching Coronation Street. And that's not fair on teachers, because teachers have families and have lives to cultivate and to mind as well. So I suppose really, if I could go back, I'd say, look, who are you as a teacher? What strengths do you bring? And how can that be, I suppose, synthesized with, I suppose, the responsibilities you have in this role? So getting the curriculum taught, you know, supporting and enriching the ethos of your school through your interactions with the children and the community, and see where you fit in that, as opposed to cherry picking some of the best things that you see in other teachers and trying to emulate them when maybe that's not your skill or that's not your forte. And that's what I change. Now, in fairness, what it did for me was it allowed me to have something to reflect on. So obviously you need to make mistakes in order to reflect and to grow as a teacher. But what I would say to a younger teacher or to somebody coming out after college is, you know, take it nice and steady. You know, you've spent a lot of your time probably dreaming and wanting to be a teacher and studying really hard. But now is your chance to figure out, well, who am I going to be as a teacher? Because there should be a variety of types of teachers in schools. Children, you know, want to see themselves in the adults around them. And if every teacher is behaving and acting and emulating the same type of thing, you know, children are going to feel alienated and they're not going to feel included. So for me, you know, being the type of teacher I am, there are kids who will look at me and go, do you know what? I'm like him. And if he's up there a teacher, well, I could be whatever I want to be as well. So I think really looking back, it would be, find out who you are as a teacher before you go and rush to be that teacher.
Yeah, that's really important and really useful advice, particularly as we hope that, you know, the audience for this will be student teachers, because those are the people that we are always trying to help to improve and that who we work with. So I suppose on that note, we might look at resources, because as teachers, we absolutely love resources. So can you tell me, I know you absolutely love picture books. Tell me about your favorite picture book.
Okay, so, but what I'm going to say is, before I tell you about my favorite picture book, I'm going to tell you, well, why did picture books become an important resource for me? When I was in college, you know, you'd have Pig in the Pond, you'd have Farmer Duck, and through your lave or your literacy, you'd learn to use picture books to teach various strategies in literacy. And I never found that very enthusing, because it was content and it was, you know, teaching reading is difficult. So when I began teaching, I suppose I was always someone who wanted to make children feel included in the classroom. But I wasn't sure how to do that through lessons, because lessons, you're really front and center. And if you deliver a message, it can be quite difficult. And it can make the children kind of feel vulnerable if you're saying, what's it like for you and your family? Or, you know, tell me about a time when this happened to you. So I kind of thought that maybe picture books could be a means to introduce certain themes, certain kind of concepts to the class a step removed. So I'd be using a resource where I had the language to use, I had the idea of methodologies to support it, and the children had experience in it. So it wasn't like me kind of using a brand new methodology. It was choosing something that the children could relate to, but just extending their thinking a little bit further. So I started to use picture books to deal with sensitive topics in SPHE, like family, like friendship, like, you know, different types of identity and gender expression. And it kind of developed from there that it was an easier way in than me front and center teaching a lesson. The storybook was, you know, it made me comfortable and it made the children comfortable. So that's where it came from. And I suppose in the intervening years since that began, there seems to be a bit of an explosion in, I suppose, the use of picture books and the variety that you can get now from junior infants right up to fifth and sixth class. Picture books aren't just for young children.
And I think that's really important as well, that we actually start using the picture books in the older classes, because they are great opportunities.
Yeah. And I think, so I kind of started at a very basic level, just, you know, one or two kind of books. I bought them online. And, you know, again, another thing would be that, you know, you might see, like, you have a wonderful resource and I have a wonderful resource, and you might think I need to buy all these picture books to begin, but you only have to start with one. Mm-hmm. About 5 years ago, I started with two or three picture books, and now I have a collection of about 200. So of that 200, I think my favorite picture book is called The Great Big Book of Families, and it's by an author called Mary Hoffman. And you know, I wouldn't be great on children's authors. What I do is, when I find books in various resources, I'll have a look. If I like them, I'll go on Book Depository and I'll buy them, or I'll have a look in Easons and see, can I purchase them? And usually when, you know, if it's the end of the month and I have an extra €100, I'll buy picture books as opposed to, you know, going to deals and buying loads of stuff for art. Anyway, so the reason this is my favorite picture book is because it kind of suits all age ranges in a primary school. So right from junior infants all the way up to fifth and sixth. It covers different families in a way that doesn't just focus on the type of family that children might find themselves in, but goes into far more detail around, you know, where families live, how families dress, the different roles in families with mom or dad working. It tackles various issues about the relationships in families. So in a way, it actually, you know, if you think about the SPHE curriculum and myself and my family, it actually covers all the objectives laid out from junior and senior infants right the way up to fifth and sixth. So it's my favorite picture book because it doesn't necessarily make any child feel like, if you're addressing it, they stand out in the class. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you know, we're all from similar types of families, but there's three different ones. And now I'm on show. It kind of covers everything from a really inclusive and broad perspective. And I just really enjoy using the book, and the illustrations are really colourful, and the book itself is quite reasonably priced. It's less than 10 euro.
Brilliant. That's great. And would you have a website or anything, a favourite website that you couldn't live without that you'd recommend to teachers?
Well, it's not Pinterest. And can I just say that, you know, Pinterest is great when you're buying a house, or Pinterest is great when, you know, you're planning a wedding or going on a holiday, because it can give you a vision and it can help you dream. I think when you place it on teaching resources, it can actually make you feel quite guilty that you're not reaching that bar. So, you know, what I would suggest to newly qualified teachers is, you know, avoid Pinterest for your mental health in relation to teaching. But a really good website, you know, and again, for me, I have the ideas in my head. The creativity comes from the way I interact with the content that I'm prescribed to teach. But a really good website that I'd suggest to any newly qualified teachers is like the PDST's website. So It's www.pdst.ie. And there you'll find a lot of like the content that you have to teach and a lot of the methodologies that will support you in that content. I think when you jump into the classroom after college, you kind of still think that all your lessons have to have bells and whistles. And I think while when you're training to be a teacher, it's important to be able to practice those skills and for your teaching practice kind of supervisors to be able to see that you'd be able to practice those type of lessons in the classroom. But I think when you get out into the real world of teaching, you need to slowly develop the skills of planning and content. And rather than try and apply all the bells and whistles, which might be, you know, looking at all your beautiful lessons from Twinkle or from Pinterest, actually go, what must I teach and how can I plan for it? And that website has really good tips, really good video exemplars, especially around ICT, especially around SPHE, especially around maths as well. So I'd say that would be my go-to resource when it comes to actually practically, You know, what can support me as a teacher. The rest you'll find on a night when you're, you know, sitting in front of the TV and the next day you have a lesson to do on something you hadn't planned. That's when you'll find a website where There's a lesson. But, you know, it wouldn't be from Pinterest, because that always makes me feel super guilty as a person because I'm not that good. And can I just say as well, that a lot of those websites and a lot of those pictures are teachers in America who just have one classroom and one subject that they teach Morning, noon and night. So you look at their beautiful literacy centres and their beautifully, you know, laid out libraries and you go, I could do that. But we have to remember we have 10 other subjects to teach. So I think we need to be mindful that what we're looking at doesn't necessarily apply to what we have to do. Mm-hmm. And just to be aware of that.
I think that's great. And I actually think it's probably very reassuring for student teachers who may have had these very high expectations of themselves. So just before we finish up, if you had a magic wand, what would you like to see changed or developed in education?
I think, you know, there's no perfect education system. But if I had a magic wand, it would actually be to say to teachers, focus on what's positive and what's good about the job. Think about why you got into it in the first place. The reality is that policymakers are always going to come up with policies that we disagree with and that we find difficult to implement on the ground. But our job is to try and find a way to do that. I think I've met a lot of teachers who sometimes get ground down by, you know, the media commentary on teaching or the rhetoric by some parents and by some colleagues around, you know, how teaching is so difficult and so draining. And I think that's not helpful because, you know, teaching is such an amazing career and teaching is such an inspiring role or profession to be involved in that you really need to hold that close to you when you're out in the teaching world, because there's so many things that will try and strip that belief away. And there's not enough people out there saying, you know, you don't have to be a perfect or a great teacher. You just have to be a good teacher and you have to strive every day to make a difference in your classroom. So my magic wand would be a little bit of, you know, a reality check for teachers, you know, not that, you know, you have it too good, but actually, you know, believe in yourself. and understand that you are making a difference, even if you don't see it. A lot of the differences we make will not be seen until these kids have grown up or they encounter difficult situations. And that's difficult. Mm-hmm. It's you know, it's not like we're a chef where we'll cook a meal and we'll get instant feedback from our guests. Our instant feedback doesn't really exist. So I think you need to build your own resilience around the reality of teaching, enjoy your life outside teaching, and just know you are making a difference. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you ask any adult, tell me one person who made an impact on your life, they're always going to say a teacher. They're not going to say, you know, the guy working in the restaurant who served me beautiful chicken nuggets when I was 15, or, you know, the bus driver who wouldn't let me on because I didn't have enough money, you know, to pay for the bus. We make an impact, and that's what people remember you for. And just like you said, it's the relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any other career where you have that opportunity to have a relationship with so many wonderful young people, and to use that influence to inspire them to just be themselves. And I think, you know, we've come such a long way in Ireland, you know, in the teaching profession, where we're so open to wanting children to be themselves, to express themselves, to be able to play a part in society, whoever they are and whatever they bring to the table. And I think that as teachers, we need to stand up and say, that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing. And no amount of policy and no amount of summer holidays and no amount of, you know, increments will make that worthwhile. The only thing that will make it worthwhile is you realizing that yourself.
Okay, that's really good. And I think if I was to summarize what Paul Knox's heart of teaching is from listening to you over the last nearly half an hour, it would be relationships are really important. Creating an environment where a child feels very safe to stay away from Pinterest at all costs.
Yeah.
And that, you know, to fail and to make a mistake is okay, but like, and to be a good teacher is okay, and just always strive to be better, you know, that we can always strive and work hard and try to make that important impact on young people.
And I have one other heart of teaching. Bring treats to your staff room. You know, whether you're teaching in a school for 6 months, 10 years, everyone appreciates something sweet in the staff room. So please, when you go out and you become a teacher, if you're a teacher already, bring some treats.
Well, I can attest to that, because prior to this podcast, Paul brought me a nice treat and a mint tea.
Which I'm actually going to eat myself. So I was always great for bringing the treats, but I was the one who probably ate 90% of them.
That's great. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time.
No bother. Thanks a million.